Beetroot juice, used by Olympic athletes for its stamina-boosting effects, caused waves at the last Olympics. Clinical studies proved 2 glasses of beetroot juice per day could increase stamina by 16%. I've been using it, and this product is excellent. Beets are a nutrition goldmine, so call 800-738-2198 or go to intelligentbeets.com. Get a 30-day supply free. That's 800-738-2198 or intelligentbeets.com.
Welcome back to Intelligent Medicine. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. This is our weekly Q&A with Layla podcast, wherein we answer your questions. And by the way, you can get questions to us via radioprogram@AOL.com. Radioprogram@AOL.com is where you email us your questions. And in part one, we had a very concerning question raised, which links vitamin D consumption with not protection against cancer, but increasing the risk of cancer. That's like really poisoning the well for vitamin D. Like, oh my God, you know, nothing worse than pancreatic cancer. So what's the deal?
Donald writes us, my father took lots of vitamin D and recently died of pancreatic cancer. Mm-hmm. Now, okay, let's go through this a little bit. The study is citing that a vitamin D of above 40 may cause heart attack and pancreatic cancer. This is a study that came out of the University of Copenhagen in Denmark back last March, and what they found
There's something rotten in Denmark.
Yeah, there's something rotten in Denmark. They assert that the level of vitamin D in our blood should neither be too high or too low. Scientists have now shown that there is a connection between high levels of vitamin D and cardiovascular death. It's not a true connection, it's a correlation. Let me clear that up right away.
Sure.
And what they've done is they studied the level of vitamin D.
To be clear, a connection is that one thing causes the other. Correlation means that we see sometimes
two things happening at the same time.
Now, if you really wanted to prove that vitamin D caused cancer or caused heart disease, you would study a cohort of men or women or a combination of both sexes who are inveterate takers of vitamin D. It should be easy to recruit those type of people because there are a lot of people like that now. And then to analyze their health records, but you'd have to do the study for a really long time. You'd have to do the study for like 20 or 30 years because these events don't occur that often, and you'd have to see. Now, the other problem with that, I'm going to short, you've got some issues to bring up there too, is sometimes the very same people who are a little more conscientious about taking supplements, you could argue that they're healthier, you know, they're more health conscious, and therefore they might have less incidence of cancer and heart disease because they're more health conscious. They take vitamins after all. Alternatively, they might be more worried. They might be people who've had a brush with cancer, or they might be people who have a family history of cancer. So they're scared, and they're taking vitamins and supplements to fend off disease. And no, sometimes vitamins can't forestall disease, and their ultimate risk of dying or having a health problem might overwhelm the partial protective effect of the supplement. So, you know, it's a little hard to pick apart those effects in a long-term study.
That's true. And what this study does is they looked at about 248,000 Danes. And of those, about 16,500 patients had died. And they looked at the connection between their deaths and their levels of vitamin D. Apparently, this is all that they looked at. I could think of at least a dozen things that might confound or flaw this, but their conclusion, they say, is clear, that the study confirms there is indeed a correlation between mortality rates and too low levels of of vitamin D, but the new thing is that the level of vitamin D can be too high. But now, here, this is Europe. They normally measure in nanomoles per liter, and they looked at a vitamin D of, you know, between 50 and 100 nanomoles, but when we do the conversion, they looked at vitamin D levels of below 20 and above 40. 40 is still borderline deficiency. So how much are we actually seeing? And not only that, we keep finding out, as the scientific research is revealing, that we need higher levels of vitamin D. Maybe the optimal level is somewhere between 55 and 85, mm-hmm. not close to 40. Mm-hmm. So maybe somebody with a vitamin D level of 44 or 45 mm-hmm. had pancreatic cancer, but they were just on the borderline there of sufficiency mm-hmm. and deficiency. Well, what does that really tell us? Anything? I don't think so.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
Here's another theory. It just occurred to me, is that Denmark is a very dark, cold place most of the year, right?
Yeah.
And so which Danes are more likely to have more sun exposure? Probably more affluent Danes mm-hmm. who may travel, you know, get vacations to go to, you know, Danes like to go to Africa, to Thailand, you know, they don't go to Florida, they don't go to the Caribbean. Except sometimes they'd like to go to Cuba, and they go on you know,
for the
fancy,
cigars.
They go on fancy vacations. Maybe uh-huh. they eat a little more high on the hog because they're a little more affluent. They can afford those sunny vacations. The poorer Danes, they stay in the dark, but they may eat a little more marginal diet because their relative poverty. Limits their ability to travel and mm-hmm. eat big exotic meals on vacations. I'm thinking in Denmark anyway, higher levels of vitamin D might correlate with affluence, and affluence might be associated with in other parts of their lives they might eat more junk, mm-hmm. eat more food, have more of a propensity mm-hmm. to overweight. I see pictures.
Eat more sugar.
I sometimes see pictures of like German tourists in Greece or in Italy, and they're all fat.
There you go.
So,
and we know that obesity is definitely associated with cancer.
Mm-hmm.
Lots of cancers, not just pancreatic.
So I will say this though. I mean, this study does give me pause, and I'm very open-minded. And the concern is, are we doing our patients possibly a disservice by giving them vitamin D? But from the standpoint of the health of patients at the Hoffman Center, when we give them vitamin D, their health improves immeasurably. We're not seeing an incidence of any kind of health problems. We'd have to have a very large number of patients to see even a blip on the increase of pancreatic cancer. Also there's so many studies that suggest that there are cardiovascular benefits to taking vitamin D. There's cancer-fighting benefits to taking vitamin D, and so on and so on. And so, I'm going to stick to my guns on this. As always, I'm humble to my beliefs, and they always bear reexamining in the face of new evidence. So this is thought-provoking. I don't think it's cause for alarm on the part of people taking vitamin D. I will continue to take my vitamin D.
Oh, me too.
And
we have to remember, this is not causality.
Mm-hmm.
This is correlation, association, which does not mean one thing caused the other.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Right. So.
Thank you. Yeah. Donald, thanks very much for your very thought-provoking question
mm-hmm.
and article. Okay. We have, let's see here, I don't have a name, but this is a female. I am a 33-year-old African-American woman who opted for a healthier lifestyle several years ago, which included no longer using relaxer for my hair. For those people who don't know, relaxer can contain lye, which is a very, caustic substance for hair relaxation. And she says, however, since doing so, and my hair has been shedding consistently and significantly since I stopped using relaxer. I've seen a dermatologist and several natural hair professionals without success. What can I do about this? Now, I wrote about this in our previous newsletter. Dr. Hoffman, you brought up some interesting points for me.
Sure.
That in her quest for adopting a healthier lifestyle, did she become vegetarian or vegan? And if she did, this may lower her stores of iron. Maybe her ferritin is too low.
Mm-hmm.
I know that when patients
limit her protein. And, of course, hair is a proteinaceous material. And sometimes mm-hmm. we see people on a little bit of a too skimpy a diet, their hair thins.
Yes, their hair thins. If their ferritin is too low, it will cause some hair shedding.
Right. Or maybe so not enough essential fatty acids.
Essential fatty acids.
People adopting a low-fat diet or a fruitarian diet or a vegan diet, they sometimes don't get enough of the omega-3s or healthy fats.
Yes. In addition, she may have low thyroid. That's something that can cause hair loss. So that's something that should be investigated.
Mm-hmm.
If her shedding has characteristic bald patches, that might be an autoimmune condition called alopecia areata.
Mm-hmm.
So that's worth a look.
Right. And then again, she does state that she's African-American. There's an absolute epidemic of vitamin D deficiency among African-Americans, primarily because they don't bother to tan themselves. Their skin's nice and dark anyway. And also, the time they spend in the sun is less likely to trigger production of vitamin D, because the pigment in the skin shields the skin from solar damage, but it also, at the same time, prevents vitamin D synthesis. So, you know, dark people are evolutionarily designed to spend time in equatorial regions that are warm, sometimes with very little clothes. And here, you know, you take a person like that and you put them in Cleveland, or you put them in Toronto, or you put them in Minneapolis, and, the result is vitamin D deficiency.
Yeah. So all of these are things worth investigating.
And just to make the point, vitamin D deficiency is associated with higher risk of autoimmunity. There's even some evidence that vitamin D deficiency is associated with hair thinning, although I can't say that taking vitamin D is just a magic miracle grow for hair, but you've got to make sure that you don't have deficiencies of key nutrients when you're dealing with hair problems.
Right. In addition, if all checks out okay, I would add supplements like biotin, like keratin booster, maybe some borage oil, maybe some silicon. That could also be helpful for hair restoration. Yeah. All right. Best of luck to this person. We hope she's listening for this answer here today. Okay. All right. We have a question from Art, who writes us from Georgia. As a child, I suffered from many allergies. At 25, most of my allergies ended when I began eating whole foods and taking supplements. However, at a healthy 69, I've suddenly become highly allergic to peanuts and hazelnuts, which I previously been able to eat.
Well, that's rough if you're from Georgia. I mean, that's the number one agricultural crop of Georgia. Remember Jimmy Carter was a peanut farmer?
Yes. Oh, my goodness. Yeah.
That's rough.
Yeah. So Art was eating peanuts and hazelnuts in great abundance, and now he's become highly allergic. Is there an explanation for allergies first appearing in adults? Could my body, when younger, have been dealing with the reaction to peanuts in a different way? What a thoughtful question.
Yeah. He's on target there. Allergies can come and go in the course of a lifetime.
Yeah.
And often allergies that you have in childhood disappear in adulthood. And particularly, you know, when I see sometimes like, 9, 10, 11-year-old boys, and they're very allergic. They have bad asthma, or they have, a lot of, nasal congestion, or many food allergies. I say, look, time is on our side, mom and dad, because something interesting is going to happen in the next couple of years. This boy is going to get a big shot of testosterone and growth hormone, and is going to become, a rough, tough cowboy, and is going to become much more resilient to allergies, usually. I mean, sometimes men retain their allergies and have bad asthma, but testosterone is a preventive for allergies. And, we're getting to a little older, and there are changes in the body. I mean, overall aging, and that could be part of it. But also, testosterone levels drop, and sometimes that may return people to their youthful situation of allergic problems. Also, sometimes the cumulative effects of environmental pollution or cigarette smoking kind of creep up on you. There are people who smoke cigarettes and they stop, and then 20 or 30 years later, they develop chronic obstructive pulmonary disease. It's like a ticking time bomb in your sinuses or in your lungs, and this can emerge or change. So, This is a person where, you know, we would look to see if there's changes in their gut flora. You know, the aging gut changes, and we know that the gut has a lot
leaky
of influence.
Leaky gut can bring on allergies.
Sure,
leaky
you know,
gut, sure.
Or a dysbiosis. You know, an imbalance in the gastrointestinal tract. The aging gut is more susceptible to imbalances of intestinal flora, and so you know we might want to pay attention to that as a causative factor. So these are some of the considerations.
Yeah. Allergy, it's also nature's argument for having more variety in the diet. Art mentions in his email that he used to eat peanuts and hazelnuts in great abundance.
Yeah.
I wonder if he was eating them so frequently as daily, could this have possibly, you know, our immune system starts to have a problem with something we do all the time.
That's very good.
Or eat all the time. So that might be something.
That's very true. Is that you may have reached a certain overload point. And, you know, one of the reasons for the frequency of allergies to things like eggs, wheat, dairy, is that we have them day in and day out. And in cultures where they have more diverse diets, they rotate the foods. But if you look at typical Americans on a standard American diet, they may be restricting themselves to six or eight different food proteins, you know, every day.
Yeah, that's true.
And
if they're eating processed foods, all of those same foods like wheat and dairy, they're in there. They're in those processed foods for the most part. I mean, there's even dairy in the form of casein in a can of tuna fish.
Yeah.
So even foods that you wouldn't imagine would contain those same ingredients, they're there. And you know what? Soy is now part of the top eight food allergies. It's become eight because soy was added. Where 40 years ago, soy was not around. But now because it's so prevalent, so it's everywhere. It's in all of our foods. It's even in it's in all kinds of processed foods. And because it's turning up, we're ingesting it more often than we think. And we become allergic. It becomes
Absolutely.
An allergen.
And, so, you know, there's a possibility that he has acquired a candida or a yeast problem. I don't know what his history is with antibiotics, but sometimes when you take too many antibiotics, you sort of flip the switch on your immunity. And this can create, or perhaps, I mean, we don't know the details. Perhaps he's on an acid blocker. Many older Americans are taking acid blockers. That can change your gut flora and cause you to be more likely to have to develop allergies. I want to just point out that I took your suggestion the other day. You know, we were talking about soy oil and its obesogenic effects, that they actually found that soy oil was more obesogenic than coconut oil. But the surprise here, it's even more obesogenic than fructose in a new study. I posted that study on Facebook. And so, but I'm guilty of, although I make my own salad dressing, you know, one of the things you buy commercial salad dressing, it's all full of soy oil because that's the cheapest oil. And then they flavor it. They maybe put a little token olive oil in there so you can make a claim that there's an olive oil dressing, but it's mostly soy oil. So I make my own dressing with artisanal extra virgin olive oil. But one major source of soy that I still have in my diet is I love mayo. And I'll make a BLT. Yep. I'll slather mayo on the BLT, or I'll make a salmon salad with leftover salmon. I'll put mayo in it, but it's Hellmann's mayo, and the main ingredient, first ingredient that appears there is soybean oil, and it's GMO soybeans. So I was just at the health food store earlier, and I picked up Spectrum Natural mayonnaise that's it's made with olive oil. I mean, I had a choice of getting...
Oh, wonderful. They have an olive oil form. Good.
Right. You suggested one that has flax oil, which is also
good
oil.
They have flax oil in it, yeah.
I didn't want to get the canola because I didn't think the canola was particularly good. First of all, that's GMO canola.
Yeah.
And
canola's not great.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Canola is... It's a monounsaturated oil, and I think there's a little omega-6, but I don't know if there's even hardly any omega-6.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'd rather have the olive oil.
Absolutely.
And, of course, the best thing to do is make your own mayonnaise. But I'll tell you, I'm not that hardcore.
If you do make your own mayonnaise, you don't want it in the fridge for greater than 2 days. You really want to use it.
There you go.
Or make the amount that you're going to use. Yeah.
Yeah. So anyway, now I'm going to get healthier. You've inspired
me. Wait, you're already healthy. Now you're going to get healthier.
Well, I'm going to be perfect. All right. So, unfortunately, we're limited for time. Do we have one quick question, or shall we tie that over till next weekend?
Oh, you know what? We're going to have to tie it over because we've got some really, really thoughtful questions coming up.
No easy questions.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nobody asks
apparently
easy questions
true
anymore. All right. We've exhausted the easy questions. All right. Well, that's what we do. We tackle questions that are of sometimes profound, complexity. And today's no exception. I think we answered some questions that I think are of general interest. And a reminder that we love doing this. We're very happy to continue our weekly dialogues, answering your questions at no cost. And these podcasts will continue to be free to download. We just surpassed our 1 million podcast download. We're very proud of that. Lots of you out there listening. And judging from where people are sending, the last person was from Georgia, so people all over the country, all over the world, are listening to this podcast, hopefully benefiting from them. But we do ask that that you check out drhoffman.com, check out our Hoffman Center store, and we have some excellent products there, and you can access some of the highest quality products that we personally select. We spend a lot of time, Layla and I, selecting the best products, the purest, the most effective, most state-of-the-art products, and we offer good prices. So check out drhoffman.com or hoffmancenter.com. Check out the supplement store for your supplement needs. And once again, a reminder that Layla is available for consultations. So some of you may not be in the New York area, can't show up in person at the Hoffman Center. But she is available via phone and with modern means of communication. You can send her your test results. You can send her your story. And you can get some of the nutritional insight specific to your case that we hopefully exhibit from time to time here.
Yes.
And are you getting patients, by the way, from other parts of the country? Are you starting?
I am. I've got patients as far as Hawaii.
Oh, cool.
So yeah, it's great. It's been very, very good.
Okay.
Very gratifying. Yes.
So check out drhoffman.com for how you can arrange that. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Thanks very much for joining us. Have yourselves a great week, and until next week, this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.